Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our show. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly.
And here we are in 2015.
Woohoo!
Ding, 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 ding.
Feels good to be back in the seat, I have to say.
What do we win? What do we win something for making it in 2015?
More listeners.
You know what, there I went to Las Vegas over the holiday, so I'll think about winning. What can I bet on?
Well, you won a lot of money. I don't blame you. This is amazing.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Okay. Right, we won't say anything.
We don't want the IRS coming after me.
Not that much.
It wasn't that much.
Exactly.
But it was fun. But it always makes me appreciate tranquility and peace so much more after spending a couple days in such a high adrenaline-filled place.
Yes.
I mean, it's crazy. We got so stir crazy being around all that energy that we found this amazing place called Mount Charleston.
Okay.
It was only about 25 or 30 miles outside of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
It was a gorgeous ski mountain, ski resort with sledding.
Oh,
and
really?
Beautiful snow. It was like, this is just stunning.
What you need after all that crazy, chaotic energy. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Wow. How was your cruise?
So, my cruise was interesting. I would say it's mediocre at best. I'm usually not that picky, but I'll tell you a quick funny story. So, they advertised this massage. It was like $79 for an hour, and it was like, you know, includes scalp massage, hands, feet. I'm like, all right, cool, I'll do it, you know. And it said on there, like, salon special, $79. I'm like, all right. So, I walk in, and I get, you know, I sign up, and he, you know, brings me back and he brings me into the salon. And I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, the massage is going to be in here. I'm like, okay. So I sit in like a hairdresser's
salon.
Yes.
Okay.
A hairdresser's chair. He puts out like a towel and he's like, okay, if you could just, you know, take off your shirt. So I'm like draped like with no shirt and like a towel over it. Okay. Here I am. And
sitting up or
sitting like kind of like halfway. I'm showing Dr. Deborah now, like kind of halfway down. Okay. And so at first it wasn't so bad. And then, you know, he does the scalp massage and I hear him start to take some oil out. And I'm like, you know, I have this thing with my hair. Like,
where are you putting
that? You don't mess with my, like, it takes me freaking so long to blow dry my hair. Like, I don't want an oil spill going on. Well, he globs so much oil in my hair and starts to do the scalp massage. I look like a drowned rat. I am furious. Then a few minutes later, the hairdresser next to him is blowing somebody out. So here I'm getting this relaxing, in quotes, massage. Well, somebody's it was horrible. So I went up to the manager afterward, looking like a drowned rat. And like made her give me a free blowout because it was like formal night that night. And I'm like, I can't go to dinner like this. So that was in essence kind of the cruise. And then the last night my son puked everywhere. So it wasn't exactly the best trip. So I was glad to be back, you know, on land again after that.
Oh my goodness. Isn't that hysterical? I mean, I would never have thought that when you went to a scalp massage that they'd put oil all over your hair.
Well, I think he really didn't know what he was doing. I mean, to be totally honest, like, I think he was sort of like, okay, let me just try to like wing this one. Like, I think he was a real masseuse in the other section, but maybe this was like for sort of the newbies. I don't know, but it was just atrocious. Yeah, it was pretty bad. So,
well, you made it and your hair looks gorgeous today. So clearly it all came out.
I had to wash it like six times. It was pretty funny because there was so much oil in there.
Wow. And even hot water wouldn't take.
No,
oil
I literally
out, right?
had to get like clarifying shampoo and this whole nine yards. Yeah. So
my
that was
goodness.
The last time I'm going on that cruise line, which I won't mention.
Okay. So overall, how were the holidays for you?
The holidays were okay. I it's interesting. Our topic today, I know we're going to talk a little bit about like kind of the postpartum holiday blues. And I kind of had the holiday blues throughout. And now I feel like that they're over. I feel better. And I know with a lot of people can kind of be the opposite. But for me, it was sort of tough throughout. Hmm. How about you?
Mixed. I mean, so many wonderful experiences. Lots of family that was around that aren't typically together. So that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We will have to definitely talk more about, though, expectations and perfectionism just throughout a theme of our show, because I will tell you that I push myself so hard to do, like, if I know that people are interested in getting together, I get so excited that we get to do it, that I volunteer. We'll do it at my house. I'll cook everything. I'll take care of everything. I'll pay for everything. I'll do everything. And then I find afterwards, I get a little bit resentful. I get a little resentful, which is only my problem, because if I have an expectation of somebody to do something, but I don't ask for it, then clearly it is not their responsibility to read my mind or to take over. So I have to get better at asking for help. That is what I came to the conclusion of this holiday season.
That's good.
I just pushed myself to do too much for too many people too often.
Right. And it's a good learning lesson. It really is.
It is. So I feel a mixture of feelings about, well, I'm excited it's 2015. For some reason, during the year last year, kept seeing 2014 as the odd year, even though it's an even year, and that 2015 felt like it was just going to be Just more interesting, intriguing, more mysteries. I don't know. So I'm actually really looking forward to it.
Oh, very cool. Call us at 323-203-0815.
There you go. Yeah. So should we, I mean, we did have a show that you missed.
Yes.
On hypnosis.
I'd love to hear the recap.
Yeah. It was just really lovely to have Rosie McDonald. She was on. She's a certified hypnotherapist, and she came on the show to help. We got many emails and a call or two that we answered in terms of, you know, when can hypnosis be useful and for what? And clearly it has many roles in people's lives if they choose to adopt it. It's sort of like a form of simple meditation.
Yep.
And all hypnosis, as Rosie conveyed, is self-hypnosis. So even though she does the guidance to get you to understand how you get yourself there, in the end, it's you who gets yourself there.
Oh.
And so all those myths about, would she say something like, people will ask her, well, am I going to cluck like a chicken? And she says, well, if you want to.
Right, exactly. Like, if you want to do it.
If you want to do that, then she can help you do that. But most people don't come for an issue that they want to work on to cluck like a chicken.
Exactly.
So if you also have anxiety and you want to be relaxed, she can help you do that. Or hypnosis in general can help you do that. So I think it was an informative show with lots of goodies. And
that's great.
It's glad to have her. And I'm glad you're back.
Oh, I'm glad to be back. I really missed it. It feels good to be back here. Just, you know, natural and the right place.
It's nice to have something, for me anyway, on a weekly basis that I really look forward to, that's part of the regular structure. I guess for many people that would be like having their weekly yoga class or a weekly Pilates class or something that you just say, this is just all for me.
Yep.
Now, I know we're doing this for you all who are listening because we really want to help, but it feels so good sometimes to just be able to talk about important things in an open forum and it's also a little self-absorbed, and sometimes that's okay.
I'm okay with that. We want to talk about this.
But
I think it's a good combination where we can, you know, express ourselves, but then help people. I do feel like our callers have gotten, you know, I felt like they felt reassured and got some good insight, and I feel good with that we, you know, gave them something to take home and think about.
Me too, and our emailers too, because
yes,
I think those are sometimes a lot of fun. I wish we sometimes had a little bit more detail so we could give more poignant and specific advice. But, you know, keep them coming as they're coming because we are always happy to get them. So what about postpartum depression and what is that like for people? I think we should probably just talk about that because we named it postpartum because it is like a little bit of an afterbirth of having a child, right?
Right,
you
completely
get all that development and the hoopla about it approaching and then it goes so fast, too. You know?
I'm sure, especially for the people who really put so much work into it. I mean, that was not me this year, but I could only imagine, you know, all the baking and the cooking and the wrapping and the gifts. And so it's like you're sort of all consumed doing all this work. And then I'm sure afterward it's like it's probably quiet and it's sort of like your brain can kind of start to go to that scary place a little bit.
Well, I've also found that if somebody puts a lot of stock in the holidays, then you can start, as we shared several months ago, you could actually start thinking about it and planning it pretty much at the end of the summer. Kids go back to school, and then it's about the holidays are coming because they really are right around the corner. From that point on, basically 2 months.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then it's the beginning of them.
Wow.
So if somebody doesn't have a whole lot of other things that they're personally attached to or invested in, and that becomes the focal point, you can imagine that after that's over, finding some other thing to
to exactly
attached to.
Well, I think that's a great piece of advice. It's so true. You need something else to kind of look forward to and you know, have a goal.
It's also something that comes up for many people. I want to hear your input about New Year's resolutions.
Oh,
do you
God.
Make them, and what do you think about them?
Oh, I used to make them, and now I don't. And it's exactly like you were talking about with expectations. I think for me, I put a very, and this is me personally, I make a very high bar for myself. And so I think that, you know, I have this expectation, like if I have this goal, I must meet it. And if I don't, I think I can get very disappointed. So I think I'm pretty self-motivated as is. I think New Year's resolutions works really well for people who maybe need a little bit of that push. I think it kind of almost pushes me on the opposite end where then I get upset if I can't meet it or it's not happening quick enough. And so, I mean, it's kind of funny. I almost had like the opposite New Year's resolutions this year. It was more about kind of surrendering, sort of letting go, you know, not having any like hard and fast goals. It's kind of funny, but that was just me personally. What
so
about
less
you?
About something to do and more about how to just be.
Exactly. Yeah? It was more of a spiritual solution. Yeah.
Well, that's lovely. Yeah. I will say that I'm anti New Year's resolutions.
You are.
I am. And the reason is, I mean, obviously, if somebody feels motivated at the beginning of the year to try to make something different, positive in their lives, obviously, I think that's a great thing.
Sure.
But I feel too many people sign themselves up for something because of a date. Oh, on New
yes.
Year's Day.
Yes.
As if that date has any sort of powerful energy to make any changes in mm-hmm. one's lives. It's a little bit like that diet mentality. I'll start on Monday.
Yes.
And then when you're starting on Monday, then you blow it all out the weekend before. You know,
completely.
So people will do such poor self-care during the holidays and do all these things that by the time they're in the place of the New Year crossover, mm-hmm. they're so depleted already that to make a resolution to do something different, you just have to heal your body sometimes
yeah.
at that time. Just heal your mind and heal your spirit so that mm-hmm. you just can walk into the New Year kind of maybe with a fresh start, but go along and see where you're at and make goals and resolutions
yeah.
as they feel meaningful and appropriate to you at any time of year.
That makes so much sense. Yep. While you were talking, I was thinking about, what do you think the most common New Year's resolution is?
Lose weight.
Exactly.
Exercise
just
more.
I was going to say, I bet you eight out of 10 Americans probably put lose weight as like their, you know, one of their resolutions. Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably, you know, needed in some people, but like, I don't know. It's kind of crazy, you know, A, that we put so much attention and focus on the physical, but B, like our just society is set up that way. I don't know.
But also we focus so much on diet as in to give ourselves less to make ourselves more as opposed to focusing on just better self-care.
Yes.
So if one's tendency is to overeat a certain food or not mm-hmm. eat enough of something else, then kind of recalibrating and rebalancing.
Yes.
And it's not about diet, it's about changing your relationship to food.
Yep.
You and I have talked about this
yes,
in the realms of
times.
Eating disorders. It's
yes.
going on a diet is basically I'm going to do a temporary solution to a long-term problem.
Issue. Yeah.
And it doesn't really change. And then you end up with the yo-yo syndrome.
Right.
People may lose that 10 pounds
because uh-huh.
they go on that fad diet and
yep.
then only to gain 20 back.
Oh, it's a horrible, horrible cycle.
And it's even yeah. worse the older we get because it's harder to lose the weight and it's so much easier to put it back on.
Right, exactly.
And I think every 5 years, it seems like my metabolism has changed.
Oh,
and
so
not
hard.
For the better.
Right, right, exactly. Scary.
But I like the idea better of instead of I'll go on a diet or I'm going to force myself to do something that I'm not really entirely even ready to do, think
yeah.
of a baby step. You know, if
yes.
you want to make a change in your life, just pick the smallest item
mm-hmm.
toward that. You know, just break it down into the smallest doable part.
So like, give me an example of what you're thinking.
Well, instead of I'm going to go on a diet and lose 10 pounds,
yeah.
for today, I'm going to choose more fruits and vegetables.
Exactly.
Instead of eating that
yep.
piece of candy tonight, I'm
yes.
going to have a piece of fruit.
I think that's very smart. I also like the idea of for today. I think it's really scary when, you know, you think so long term. It's like, oh, this is unachievable. But, you know, if you break it down in small time fragments, then you can definitely do it. I agree.
I like fragments, too. That was a small frame and a fragment, right?
fragments. I guess I did say that.
Oh, I love new words.
It's like a sniglet. A sniglet is like a combined word that's like not really in the dictionary.
Yes.
It's so funny.
Is there a dictionary of sniglets?
Yes.
There is.
My husband has it. How funny is that? Yeah.
That has to be great.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoever
I love
thought
that.
Of all those.
I'll see if he has it. I'll bring it in.
Are there different people who have contributed to the sniglets? Or is it one person who created all
That's a
own?
Great question. I don't know. It would be interesting to see. Yeah. I think it's probably gathered over time.
Oh, I love
people.
It. That's awesome. Okay. You're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we definitely want to take your phone call. So please call us at 323-203-0815, or you can always feel free to email us. And I think we should just launch into an email that we received several this last week. So
sure,
why don't we just drop in? And by the way, even if we're having a topic each week, you are welcome as a listener. Please call us about anything. Anything that you think that either Dr. Deborah or Coach Kelly can give you a little bit, a sniglet of advice.
Exactly.
We'll define that later, whatever that sniglet is.
Sure.
Please feel free to call us.
Sure.
So you want to read the first one?
Sure. Dear Deborah and Coach Kelly, I'm lost about New Year's resolutions, what we were just talking about, because I have a problem with motivation. Every time I try and do something, I get so nervous I will fail, I end up not doing it at all. How do you help someone get motivated? Signed, not lazy, but more nervous.
So the anxiety internally sets this person up for
almost
feeling like they're going to fail.
Or like a paralysis, sounds like.
We're going to just drop in because you and I have done this before. Gender, male or female?
Oh, I'm thinking female.
You're thinking female. See, and I went for male. Is
Again?
That hysterical?
Weird.
We're opposite in that way. That's great. Okay, well, let's just call her a she.
Okay.
Okay, and if you are listening and we have insulted you, I'm terribly sorry.
I'm sorry.
I don't know that we would give that much different advice.
No,
whether we're
I wouldn't.
Male or female.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where does motivation come from? Usually it comes from having a desire to achieve something that you believe is going to make yourself better.
Okay.
But if you don't have motivation, sometimes that's because of depression.
Right.
Sometimes it's because of having repeated attempts at doing something and failing at them. And so then not having the confidence that you can achieve it. So confidence and motivation are highly correlated. The less confident we are, oftentimes, the less motivated. That's my experience anyway. Do you have a different experience?
I don't know. I think it can go the opposite direction too. Sometimes that paralysis because you want it perfect. So you have the motivation, but it's just that fear that it's just not going to be good enough. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I see it. So I don't know.
No
worries.
You could also be overly confident and then not have motivation because you may think that everything's just going to come to you.
Absolutely. Now that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, I would say just specific advice here is kind of walk through that nervousness about failing. And the way we do that is we say, what is really the most disastrous outcome of not succeeding?
It's true.
Right? And by and large, in most situations, the real consequence of not succeeding at something, pretty minor.
Right. Exactly. It's so true.
So getting out of catastrophic thinking, which tends to accelerate anxiety, and maybe understanding where this came from, where she got this, that every time she tries to do something, she fails. Is that a early childhood parental thing? That no matter what she did, it wasn't good enough?
Yep.
And how would she be able to let go of that?
Exactly. Yeah. When I was thinking too, kind of what we were talking about, maybe her goals are too big and maybe making it more manageable, breaking them up into slightly smaller where it feels more achievable and she's not as nervous. Like, let's say she wants to, I'm making this up, become a clinical social worker and she's so nervous, there's so much to do. Okay, well, you know what? For today, maybe, just look online and browse the courses and see how that feels, instead of her goal in 2015 is to become this and do it. And it's like, okay, maybe my goal, for today is to look online and see how that feels for me. So that's what I would say.
And as you're saying that, it brought me to something that I learned a long time ago that was so relevant in my life. The difference between internal or intrinsic motivation versus external or extrinsic motivation. When motivation comes from wanting to please someone else, while it's a very powerful motivator, it doesn't usually get us to actually achieve because there's a level of lack of acceptance. So without embracing from an internal perspective that I also want to do this because I think it has value to me, We tend to not fulfill those. So I'd ask her to look at where is she supplying her motivation? Is it because she thinks that she's going to get the accolades from somebody else?
Yes.
Or she thinks she's going to get a big reward at the end mm-hmm. for doing something? That. Or is it really about her own self-growth or something she perceives is going to benefit her?
Yes. That's a really interesting point.
We're just not as altruistic as I think we would like ourselves to be. And even people who walk around on the planet acting as if they are entirely selfless and about everybody else, in reality, you'll usually see some undercurrent of strong selfishness in that person because it almost has to balance out. So I think it's more valuable to simply say something like, okay, there's kind of a mix here. I want to do this because I think you're going to be pleased or like it, or I'm going to get some personal accolades from you.
Right.
But I really want to do this because I actually see the value in it. I see that it would actually be meaningful.
Right. I totally see that. While you were talking, I don't know if this is related or not, but I just wanted to share a crazy story. So when I first moved to LA, I was about 21 and I needed a roommate. So a friend of mine hooked me up with this girl and we were looking for apartments and I was going away that weekend. And so she said, oh, no problem. You know, I'll look for apartments. And we had agreed we were going to get a 2-bedroom. And so I said, no problem. You can just sign it. And, you know, I trust you. And
Sign the lease.
Uh-huh. And I trust you. And I come back and she had purchased a 1-bedroom. And I'm like, wait a second, you know, how is this going to work? And she's like, oh, it's okay. You can have the main bedroom and I'll sleep in the living room. And I'm like, huh? You know, like, how is this going to work? And she's like, no, I'm really cool. I'm easygoing about it. And it was like red flag. I was like, I don't know how this is going to, first of all, I would never offer that because I know myself. I would be like, you know, ugh, I would hate it. And so I was thinking, how is this girl going to possibly like living out in the living room? Like I have my own private room, but I'm going to come out and see her and, you know, she's got no privacy. And so she convinced me, you know, up and down, I have no problem with it. It's
but
totally
wait,
okay.
Not only that, but you would have really no privacy either because one of the ways that we have privacy in sharing space is that we each have our own separate
That's a very
space
good
so
point.
That when you want that communal area,
yes,
you have access to it, or especially if someone isn't there. But you will always, if you're in the communal area, be in her space, even if she's not there.
Completely what it felt like. And I felt like, you know, she got like a couch that opened up. So it was like when I'd be sitting on her couch, it was like her bed. It was so weird. Anyway, long story short, it ended up, you know, we got into an argument about something else, but I could tell there was so much underneath. And I'm sure she was just resentful that, you know, and by the way, I'm sorry, the most important part of this whole story is she was paying more. We had agreed upon a set price and this was more. And she said, oh, my parents are going to cover the rest. So not only was she living in the living room, but her parents were subsidizing the rest. So there was a lot of resentment. And it just reminded me of, you know, kind of what we're talking about. Like, I don't know. It's just like you need to communicate your needs, you know, truthfully and honestly. And, you know, even if you're, you know, trying to be altruistic, like if you're really not feeling it, you know, it's going to come out in another way.
Wow. And now I'm so curious. Was this a good friend of yours?
No.
No,
she
just,
was
just a random.
She was crazy town. I mean, okay. It was, yeah, there was more problems than a math book with that girl.
Wow. Because it makes me, you know, you can't actually. Motivation is not objectifiable. You can't see it, right? It's like intention and motivation is an internal process. So just in hindsight, just to speculate, what do you think her motivation was
of doing that?
Did you think that, she thought that you would like her better?
I wonder if it was like a people-pleasing thing. Yeah, I'm trying to think what, I mean, the complex was nice. That she saw. So I don't know if she almost got sold on the amenities of the complex and was like, okay, great. You know, we have a pool and we have a balcony and, you know, we'll deal with the rest. And then it was like, maybe she really thought that she wouldn't be bothered by it, which is possibility. Or like you said, maybe she really thought, well, maybe she'll like me more and, you know, she'll appreciate me and maybe treat me differently. You know, maybe there was that underlying, like, well, if I give her the room, then maybe I'll get treated, you know, better. Who knows?
Wow.
Yeah, interesting.
What an experience.
Oh, I'll never do that again.
How quickly were you able to get out of it?
So it was we were probably living together maybe 4 months before the fallout. And then she was like, I'm moving and you got to go. You know, it was kind of like, huh? Like I only had like 2 weeks to kind of get my crap together. And yeah, kind of nuts.
Disaster.
Oh, I've lived with some crazies. Like, I don't know. Now, of course, I have the radar. But maybe back then it was like I purposely, you know, disabled the antenna to pick up the crazy people. But yeah, I lived with a couple. There was one girl that I lived with who, oh my God, she was like a neat freak, and she was also so paranoid. So every time we walked in the door, she'd always be like, lock it, lock it. So I'd have to like come in and lock the door. It was weird. Yeah, and she felt like I didn't clean up enough, and I'm not a messy person by any means, but she was just like overly neat. And so that lasted about a month.
Wow. Yeah. I had a roommate once who believed that if she was nice to me by like buying me like an extra croissant or a muffin or bringing me coffee, that somehow that gave her license to borrow all my clothes in my closet.
No.
Now, mind you, what was hysterical about this is she was at least 7 or 8 inches shorter than I am. So we didn't even wear the same size. So she would take my skirts and she'd like roll them over. She would take my clothes that still had tags on them. And then they'd be like in a pile and a lump on her floor. I'm like, how did this happen? She said, well, I got you coffee last week.
Oh, that's horrible. Like,
this is not a deal that I am making with you.
Exactly.
This is just not going to work. But she had I actually owned the property. It was a condo that my parents actually owned. And so I was able to get tenants in it while I lived there so they would help pay for my college. I would have to have these roommates. And, you know, at that point.
Exactly.
I was only 19 years old, so I didn't know how to filter out roommates.
Absolutely. It was like, can you pay? Okay, great. You're accepted, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Are you breathing? Come on in.
Yeah,
you know?
Right? Oh, goodness. The things we do. And we are so glad you're listening. Please give us a call at area code 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Shall we just go on?
Yeah, let's do the second email we
got. Here's another one. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I feel like I've been preparing so much for this holiday season because we had 12 family members over for dinner and I was cooking, wrapping gifts, etc., that I'm definitely experiencing a little depression now that it's all over. I feel like I had a purpose before and now I'm back to sort of this humdrum life I was living. I mean, Christmas isn't that big of a deal, but I guess it gave me meaning for a few months out of the year. I know that's pathetic, but it's true. I'm now lost on what I can do to feel useful again. I work at an insurance company, and my life is pretty boring. Signed, give me purpose. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, you are not pathetic.
I was just going to say
that. This is so common for so many people. So please take any kind of embarrassment or depression out of that, and let's try and actually figure out some ideas for you to be able to feel not better. Have this experience next year, because it's coming around again next year.
What I was thinking too is, what about volunteering? I mean, obviously she's got a job, or he, or she, I don't know, whichever. We'll call her a she. She's got a job, so maybe volunteering, because there's nothing like feeling purposeful in my opinion, than volunteering. And feeling good because you're giving back, you know, you're having some sort of goal. You can make it as timely as you want, or you know, as non-committal as you want. So that might be a good suggestion.
Absolutely, and paying attention to if we fill up our lives according to an event. Oftentimes, again, that's about other people. So I hear wrapping gifts, doing dinners for everybody. And so maybe there's a hidden need or maybe an acknowledged need of wanting some sort of attention or affection from other people that you feel is missing in your life. Maybe it's not just purpose, but the purpose of getting people to appreciate you. So I think if you find, again, that internal motivation for some of the actions, do you love doing those things? Or are you just doing that more to please other people?
Sure.
And then, of course, you know, your day's over. It's January 1st, and that's behind everybody else. And they're probably not even thinking about it anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's interesting you were talking about not feeling appreciated. In that case, let's say that is true for this girl. Would you recommend her saying something to the people she loves? I don't feel appreciated enough. Or what way do you think she can get that fill? You know, there are other ways besides just being straight about it and saying, hey, I don't feel appreciated, or I need more affection.
Well, I would first ask her to get some advice from other people who know her to see whether her expectations of appreciation
are too high.
Mm-hmm. Because, again, here's what is the difference between manners and appreciation. Somebody comes over for dinner.
Yeah.
They have a great time. They tell you that they really enjoyed the meal. They loved being there.
Yes.
They give you a hug at the end. They give you a little kiss on the cheek and say, thank you so much. I had a great time. right? To me, that's appreciation.
Totally.
I mean, that's
normal.
That's a hefty dose of appreciation.
Yeah.
But I know people who will then sit in waiting and check the mail and the email day after day after day looking for that extra card or the little gift in the mail or, oh, that was so generous of you. Mm-hmm. I'd like to invite you over, a reciprocal invitation.
Yes.
So that moment in time of appreciation actually completely got lost.
Yes.
Because the only thing that person might be giving credit to are these other...
Yes.
You know, manners and such.
Wow. Like going the extra mile and then wow.
You know, it's like for me, you are wonderful at this. You send thank you cards. You actually do the handwritten thank you card.
Yeah.
Type of thing, which I think is a beautiful thing.
Oh,
I'm just not that person.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that I don't so appreciate
the things that
people give to me.
You were so cute because you called me to thank me for my thank you card. And that was like really, I'm like, Deb, you don't have to do that. It's okay. Like, you know, it was so sweet. But like, yeah, no, I don't know. It's, I guess it's like drilled in me when I was little. My mom was always like, you need to write a thank you, you know?
Think I'm responding also to who my mom was. And my mom was somebody who didn't really matter how much you appreciated her. She just had an empty hole in her cup.
Oh,
so it's as good as the last moment of praise for her is all that she could hold on to.
Wow.
So, you know, once you gave her the praise and you think you meant it. It was genuine. You meant it. But you've now moved on to your own thoughts, your own life.
Yeah.
She was still sitting and holding on to, when am I going to get that appreciation? So it just felt like it was just never, ever enough.
Sure. And there are people like that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, again, when we do things for other people, make sure that our expectations are low, that we're really doing it because it makes us feel good also.
Yep.
And that it's nice to give something to somebody. But if you then expect a lot in return, then you're probably bound to be disappointed.
There's a great saying somebody once told me, do it for fun and for free. And I love that because it's like, it's true.
Yeah.
You know, don't expect anything and do it because you want to for fun. And, you know, I really like that. I hold on to that.
There's something else that really stands out for me in this email. So I don't want to let it go about the end is I work at an insurance company and my life is pretty boring.
Mm.
Well, most of us spend a fair amount of our time, if we need to work, at work. So that's about a third of one's working life.
Yeah.
And so to be at a job that is considered or that you perceive to be boring, I would say try to find to either make that job more interesting to you or look into other career jobs.
This amazes me because I'm like jumped around so many times in my life with careers. Like I don't know how people stay at a job and they're like miserable and bored and unhappy. And I understand sometimes obviously there's financial issues, but all the other times I think people are just so afraid to make that change. But I feel like if you're already so miserable, like you're already at the bottom. It can only go up from there, in my opinion. So I'm amazed that people can withstand that. Just rough. I don't know.
Well, we have a society, though, that's very committed to our happiness being about how much money we make.
Yes.
And so if somebody's making a decent living and, you know, you've actually created a lifestyle to fulfill that, based on that income, it does become very, very scary if you have, you know, it's almost like for me, I can see that my level of responsibility to others and myself has increased dramatically over the years. What I would have been able to live on at 25 years old on my own with just my own level of happiness was so much less than what I believe I could right now without having to give up so many things that I have actually grown accustomed to and enjoy.
Right.
So I think that idea of loss of a job is way deeper for many people. It's maybe loss of security. It's loss of, you know, so that stands out for me. But also that if a job to somebody feels boring, then boredom is usually overstaying one's interest, right? So find something about the job that you can turn into being more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's another aspect within the company or a different role or responsibility or something that you can take on that would give you more joy.
Exactly. An adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see that.
Wow, that was a great email. Boy, I can certainly relate to that. It's almost what I was talking about.
Exactly. You know, it's so funny.
12 family members for dinner. Somebody I know write this about wants me to get a message.
Right,
here.
Exactly.
Although I do not feel bored in my career at all. I love it. So, and I don't work at an insurance company.
No.
Okay. Well, again, you are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Please give us a call anytime at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Should we go on?
Let's go on to the next one. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I know you girls are speaking about post-holiday blues today, but I had a burning question I had to ask about relationships. I remember a few weeks back you spoke about liars and cheaters. Do you have any tips and signs on when your partner is cheating? I have a suspicion my partner's cheating, but I'm not sure. When you were talking about it on your show, I just had a funny feeling he may be. Signed, could he be cheating? ? Wow. So the first thing that I want to say is that I am huge about instincts. And I feel like if your instincts are telling you that he is, you're probably right. And you should listen to that. That's the first thing I want to say. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And if he's not cheating, then something's off anyway.
Exactly.
Right? So sometimes we will fill in the gaps because that is a common way that we start to feel uncomfortable in a relationship. It's common to start thinking that a partner is doing something like cheating,
yeah.
But it's also possible that the partner has become preoccupied with something he isn't telling you, something that he feels is not something that he has the right to say in the relationship. Yeah. So whatever he's holding on to that's drawing him to become more and more distant in the relationship is an indication that something isn't working.
Right, exactly.
You know, so I would be less likely to conclude that just because if your instinct says that someone's cheating, I would say trust your instincts that something's off.
Off, yeah.
But try not to fill in the gaps too much without more information.
That's true, yes.
Okay. I'd be curious about what it is that she, what that suspicion is coming from. Clearly, if somebody has a strong change in their behavioral patterns around how they work in the relationship, like how they approach you, how they talk to you, but you see an increasing preoccupation, a change in work responsibilities that cause somebody to be more drawn and closer to somebody of that they may be attracted to in the workplace. Those are pretty big signs.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. If the routine has changed, I think you should just be direct and ask your partner, like, hey, why has this changed? You know, just to try to get a sense of, you know, what's going on here. And then, you know, I'm a big person at just being straight up and honest and just saying, like, hey, what's going on here? Something, you know, I don't know if you necessarily even need to go straight for the are you cheating, but like, hey, you know, are we okay here? What's going on? Did something change? You know, just to kind of get some sort of feedback.
All right, so your partner says, no, honey, everything's fine. I'm just a little preoccupied at work, and I'm, you know, I've just been sleeping all that well.
Then I would go even, you know, more honest and say, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I internally something just doesn't feel right. You know, maybe we really need to have an honest conversation about what's going on. You know, is there anything that you want to tell me directly? Now is the time.
Because, you know, most people who are cheating will deny it for a long period of time until the evidence is so
clear,
pressing, and so, like, we actually can't deny it. Like,
yeah.
Here's the hotel room bill that I just found, the credit card, when you told me you were in Atlanta.
Right.
And here you were.
Exactly. Having a ball.
Yeah, right. And I happen to know that all these people were out of town, so why were you there? You know, then you catch somebody in an absolute direct lie.
And then
they may fess up to something. Ooh. But even then, if it isn't absolutely clear that there is not another path out, they'll usually do that.
So what do you do in that case? If you kind of know your partner's cheating, you have a, you know, really good feeling, but you don't have the exact evidence, and he keeps denying it. I mean, where are you in that point in your relationship? What do you do?
I'm at the point now, which I don't think I ever would have suggested this a long time ago, but I would say, okay, well, then if that's the case, clearly something's causing me to be quite insecure.
Yeah.
So I would please ask that you now open up your emails and you open up your phone records, and I want to see things, and I want to have greater accountability and showing up in ways that, that helps me feel grounded, and that's not
the case. This is very interesting. I like that a lot. Now, what if the husband says, no, I'm not going to, I don't want to do that. If you don't trust me, then,
that is also a huge red flag in a relationship, that if you tell a partner who supposedly loves you that their behavior is causing you to feel insecure and they don't want to take any responsibility or look at that in any way and wants to just point the finger and said you're crazy or that's on you, then that warrants going to couples therapy right there. Because that in and of itself is not a loving, reciprocally, mutually giving relationship.
Yeah. Oh, that's so scary. Yeah. Wow, really interesting stuff.
It's, I mean, that's tough because I work, you know, in my private practice with a lot of couples come to me because one or the other has discovered a form of infidelity. And, you know, usually their relationship is so in the toilet by that time.
Yeah.
Because that, unless somebody's a serial cheater and they would cheat regardless of the relationship, usually one or the other has rationalized or justified in their minds that there's no other way out.
Yep.
And this is my only option because, as human beings, we do tend to be selfish, and we will weigh out if our needs are not being met in some areas, then we don't want to give that up, but we definitely want to feel whatever we're not feeling from our partner and not give that up either.
So exactly.
You can cross between a rock and a hard place of which way do I go, and then certain people will tend to cross that line. And then when you're found out, now you either have to fess up and face all of the problems in the relationship that got you there.
Exactly.
Or you're probably going to have to end the affair, and you might not be ready to do it.
Right.
You know, or you're going to lose your relationship with your husband or partner that you don't want to lose. What always intrigues me, though, is why people cheat who are not married, not living together, and have no children together.
It's like, what's the point? I know.
Just say it's over.
I 100% agree with you.
Insecurity, I don't know. Insecurity,
padding. I was just going to say, insecurity and that comfort and another obviously, you know, like something about the that title or that closeness. I don't know what it is. Interesting.
That's got also long-term affairs are probably a bit different than I think the short version. Sort of I strayed off the path.
Exactly.
I realize this is wrong and I don't want to be that person, so coming back.
Right.
But you know what's got to be the worst is discovering over the holidays that you're partner might be cheating.
Oh, that's so hard.
That would be tough.
God. Yeah, very, very tough.
Oh, my. Well, I hope that was a little bit helpful. I like your idea, though, about being straight up. It's bitter than, I think, just sitting and stewing on it, because a lot of times in our own minds, things become inflamed and exaggerated when we don't talk about our insecurities, when it really could be that your husband, he just is literally tired. Oh, honey, let me show you this project that I'm working on and why it's taking so much time.
Yep.
You know, and what's going on. So it may really not be what our worst fears are.
Exactly. It's so true. Yeah.
We're also more prone to believing somebody's cheated on us if somebody has cheated on us
in the past, of course.
Because, I mean, cheating behavior doesn't have a monopoly on a specific behaviors. People who aren't cheating can sometimes display many of the same behaviors that people who are cheating.
Yep. Right. Yeah, and if you've already been cheated on, you've got it in your mind. Oh, my God, this could happen again, or am I falling for it again? Yeah.
Absolutely. So I can only say to that, oy vey. I hope he's not, and I hope you find some clarity in your conversation.
I agree.
I think we have time for one more.
Sure.
But please, if you have a question, you want to call us, area code 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. You're with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Okay. Shall we do this one about New Year's resolutions?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Ah, look at that. It does look like something we already talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we move on to the other one then?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that one.
All right. Here we go. I have a little problem that I'd like your input on. I'm sort of an insomniac, and my husband is a light sleeper. So whenever I fidget or get up to walk around or toss and turn, he ends up with a bad night's sleep. 3 or 4 nights in a row, and he gets cranky, then we sometimes fight. I've been to doctors, and they want me to take medication, but that makes me groggy the entire next day. I heard Coach Kelly mention meditation, but the ones I've tried don't seem to help me relax and sleep all night long. I can't bear not to sleep with my husband. Separate rooms would be terrible. Do you have any other ideas? Thanks. Z's, I wish, meaning the sign of sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you know, I have to tell you that has to be one of the worst experiences in a relationship, is when one person can't sleep because the other person is snoring.
Exactly.
Or tossing and turning.
Yes.
Or just not being able to sleep at all. And I had a period in my life where I went many years with huge sleep disturbance, and it was almost unbearable to the point where I thought that I was going psychotic. Like, I actually couldn't, like, 3 hours a night.
Wow.
It wasn't in the days where I used to use drugs. It wasn't a drug-induced experience.
Right.
It was just couldn't, because the noises, the et cetera, the way the house was set up, just just didn't work.
Yeah.
Terrible. Have you ever experienced that
before? Yeah, so I have so many thoughts on this for this emailer. The first thought is, could her husband use earplugs? Because my husband constantly stirs at night and gets up and goes to the bathroom, and I use earplugs, and it's been a godsend. Like, it just makes a difference. And then that way, we don't have to sleep in separate rooms. The other thought for her as an insomniac, I think we need to look at what's going on with her. You know, how is her caffeine intake? A lot of times, doctors recommend you stop taking caffeine after 12 p.m. Because it can really, you know, be in your system for 6 to 8 hours. The other thing, a lot of times, I think in our society, we're looking at computer screens way too late at night.
Absolutely.
And that blue light can keep you up. They've done studies on it. There's something about that light that just kind of sends signals to your brain that, you know, it's time to get up and awaken. So you can purchase these orange sunglasses that I actually have, that you can wear if you need to do computer work at night, and it won't keep you up. It counteracts that blue light.
Too much exercise late at night also
completely can disturb that rhythm.
Irritated by something, like dealing with an intense problem, like a friend calls you late at night and then it's weighing on your mind.
Sure. And for that suggestion, I always like a worry journal, you know, next to your bed.
I like that too.
You know, just write down, you know, what's going on that night, or, you know, your to-do list that night, or anything else you think of. A lot of times I'll be in bed, I'll be like, oh, I got to think of, you know, I got to do this. And so just write it down and just sort of, you know, leave it off the pillow. And then, you know, I know she said meditation's hard, but even sometimes body scanning, I think, is really helpful, meaning, you know, just closing your eyes and just sort of imagining each part of your body relaxing, you know, starting with, you know, your feet and your toes, and just sort of, you know, having them be relaxed. And then
also,
you know,
the
going
one where
up.
You clinch the muscle first,
yes,
and then you relax
either
it.
One. That, exactly.
That
yep.
A little bit more intense. And also hypnosis.
Yes.
Actually going to a hypnotherapist for a session or two that you could take a tape home. That's
sure.
A relaxation tape, because sometimes it's hard for people to quiet their own minds.
Yes.
But obviously, if they hear the voice of somebody else,
that's
who
smart.
Can get them
yeah, exactly.
softened and settled.
Right. But I think this problem is solvable. I really do.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Also, maybe it's possible that going to bed at the time that she's going to bed may not be best for her schedule. In other
yes.
words, sometimes we try to go to sleep too early, even if we're really tired, or we have erratic sleep during the week where we go to bed at different times.
Yes.
So it's good also to try to find the more ideal
yep.
rhythm and try to stick to that and not change sleep patterns too much.
Right. Even on the weekends,
even
too.
Even on the weekends.
Yes.
And if you know, put a healthy nap now and again is great, but for people with insomnia, naps are often not a
good
idea.
That's what I heard.
Because then you might sleep when you're so exhausted 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the day.
And then you can't.
And then you can't go to sleep.
Or cut your nap and make it like a half hour power nap, which, you know, can work for some people. Some people it might not. So I think there's a lot of trial and error here and experimenting, but you know, this is definitely solvable, so don't worry.
And something that a lot of people don't realize is that medications don't have to be chronic and long-term.
Mm-hmm.
That sleep disturbance sometimes can be corrected quickly with medication, and then you can titrate off or remove yourself from the medication sooner than you might anticipate. Yes, there are people who have been on sleep medications for 6 years, 9 years, 10
wow.
years. They become addicted to them. They're taking them all the time, and they can't sleep without them. But sometimes we have to just shift our brain and take that helpful medication. Just like, you know, if you're iron deficient
yep.
and you take some iron supplements, you may not need it all your life.
Exactly. But just at that point
once you
in
get
time.
Those levels back up, because sleep itself is so critical
oh.
to our sanity and our functioning during the day.
Absolutely.
And all the mechanisms of our bodies and our organs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I totally agree, Kelly, that this is very workable.
Yes.
And very, very solvable.
Yeah.
Yes. And on that note, we have to start to say our goodbyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to point out, I will be working at Neighborhood Counseling Center in Encino. If anybody is interested in seeing me, I'm now taking clients. And then, of course, Dr. Debra has her practice.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out more information at drdebraonline.com.
Yep. That's drdebraonline.com. And next week, what are we going to talk about next week? Something about pressure.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about those expectations, pressure, perfectionism. I think that's all tied.
All good.
Yeah.
So we're going to say goodbye. You've been listening to Dr. Debra.
And Coach Kelly.
And make sure that you send us those emails.
Thanks so much. See you next
Bye.
Time.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.